times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looks so much that it's passed down. Times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that.
We're just gonna go. Hey, how you doing?
Oh, hey. Welcome back. It's only fitting that it would go this way on the first one back. Joe is doing well.
I think so. I'm looking at looking into it.
Yeah, I am. I'm sun-kissed. I very much enjoyed being in the sun for 10 days. Did lots of walking, almost 60 miles, which is wild.
That's some steps.
And it's 247 flights of stairs. Mm-hmm. And we did, I don't know, something like 130,000 steps. It was a lot.
Wow.
That was over like an 8-day period because we had 2 days of travel where we were sitting on a plane for the most part. But once you're in country, it's like,
go.
Yeah. And it's all hills and mountains and hills and mountains. There's no flat. Maybe Tel Aviv by the coast, but other than that, you're climbing things.
Beautiful.
So it was good. A lot of good food. Ate like some shawarma and some falafel and all kinds of goodies.
Nice.
Lots of fruits and veggies and fresh squeezed pomegranate juice and all kinds of goat and chicken and duck and lamb. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Sweet.
It was very, very good.
I mean, talk about it. I mean, we've been away from each other forever.
We have. I mean, all that's happened for me is Israel in that time frame. So, you know, it was a fun trip. The beginning part of the trip, I had to step in and lead some stuff I hadn't planned on leading. And so I got to give away a big check and I got to baptize all the guys in the Jordan and got to be a part of a number of government meetings that was very cool. And so got to do some things that I'd never done before, too, which was really neat. That was the other thing that you know, every time you go, they have these tours and, you know, you'll do the pilgrimage stuff and you'll go where Jesus was and you go to Capernaum and you go to some of these places. But every time I try and book stuff that's fresh, well, I wasn't in charge of necessarily booking this trip. I was just coming to help serve the guys on the trip. We had about 30 pastors from all across the country and two guys from Micronesia. We had a guy from Saipan and a guy from Guam that joined in on the trip, and fantastic group of guys. But there was a whole bunch of stuff I had never done before. So we had a blast with some of the new stuff. And, you know, as much fun as it is going to the same places and watching the light bulb go on for other people, it was fun to go to some of these other places. We went to this thing. You'd probably love this from a business standpoint. Went to this place called United Hatzalah. And what they are is they've created motorcycle ambulances because in cities, particularly Jerusalem and some of those places, it's really tight. You can't get an ambulance everywhere. Sometimes the ambulance can take 30 minutes to get places. So what they've done is they've outfitted these motorcycles and bikes and with everything you'd need from a defibrillator on down that goes, it's got like this big back, you know, part of the motorcycle. And so it has everything that an ambulance needs other than transport. You can't transport, you know, a person on the back, but you can get there and provide the first aid. So these motorcycles can go places the ambulances can't. And but this is the cool part. And this is going to totally, tickle Joe's fancy here. It is 100% run by volunteers. So they train people, doctors and teachers and lawyers and custodians and hotel workers get trained in first aid EMT stuff. And they train these folks and then they give them their packs that they carry with them. And they have these special, there's an app that people can go to and essentially they'll punch in the number and it sends a message out to the five closest volunteers that are near that person. And their average response time is like under 90 seconds.
Whoa.
Incredible.
That's amazing.
And so this is the coolest part. So we go and we get like the backstory and how it all got started and how they're working it in Jerusalem and a couple of the cities. And they're really working to expand what they're doing. They're getting a lot of pushback from the traditional health industry because they're taking a lot of money away because there are times where they've gotten to a patient, treated the patient that by the time the ambulance shows up and probably would have just taken them to the hospital, the person's already on their way and has been treated and is fine and doesn't need to go. And they do it all for free.
That's beautiful. That's an awesome thing.
It's so cool. So, so we go, we get this whole tour and I'm like, man, I've never seen anything like this. And the cool part is it's nonpartisan and they have Jews and Arabs and Christians and Muslims and all sorts of backgrounds. And the whole goal is like, we're going to save lives. And everybody drops their political affiliations at the door. It's a really, really, like, it was kind of weird, but in, like, the best way possible. So we go to that, and then that afternoon we're touring the City of David. And so we go, and there's some steps, and it's in a tight little spot. I think it's on the south side of Jerusalem, of the Old City. And we're there, and we're getting some water before we start down our descent down into the City of David. And all of a sudden we see the motorcycle pull up, and somebody was having an emergency that we weren't even aware of. They put it in there, and we got to watch this volunteer show up, treat them, get them all taken care of, get, I don't know if they did some oxygen or whatever, put a mask on, but they had all their gear with them, treated them right there. And before the ambulance could, you know, got there, they were all taken care of. And so we recorded it, and we sent it to the organization we were with that morning. We're like, hey, we got to see it, like, in real time.
The Good Samaritan Corporation.
Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah. So that was cool. And that was kind of a modern Israel twist on, you know, obviously an ancient trip. The other thing that we did, Joe, that I'd love to go do a half day or a full day of this, is we went to this place called Caliber 3, and it's where Israel does counterterrorism training. And, you know, there's all sorts of signs, top secret. You know, you can't take pictures on the way in. They collect all your passports. Like, it was, and they have a gift shop, and they do, you know, some of it is used for PR. So once we got into our range, we were allowed to take out our phones and take pictures and videos and such. But for the most part, because they're training different governments, they're training different entities on how Israel basically is the, they live in a really bad neighborhood and how they survive in that really bad neighborhood and what they do to navigate that. It was the coolest experience. I mean, they did live round demonstrations with fully automatic weapons, and, like, it was intense. And we only did, like, ours was maybe an hour and a half demonstration. So they had, like, a little video, and we got to know our instructor, who's special forces and stuff. Then we all got our eye and ear protection. And then they walked us down into, I think it was lane 5 or 6. They have several of these. They do Krav Maga training, hand-to-hand combat, all sorts of stuff. So we get into ours, and ours is set up like the market that we would go to in Jerusalem called Mahane Yehuda, or the Shuk is what they call it for short. And so it's got, like, you know, stalls for people to buy stuff, and it's got mannequins, it's got all this stuff. And they explained to us, you know, there's a row of cones here, and about 10 yards away, there's another row of cones. You can go wherever you want as long as you're inside the cones. Do not go outside the cones. And we're all like, okay. And they're very intense and direct. And then they asked for a volunteer, and one of our pastors tried to push one of the pastors forward. And the guy's like, you know what we do in the military? When someone volunteers somebody else, you're not the volunteer. So he actually got to go on the other side of the cones and was someone they were going to rescue during this terrorist attack. And so all of a sudden they put these speakers on, and it's like people talking, and, like, you're in the market, it's loud. And then these gunshots start, and then soldiers come out of nowhere, and then they're shooting live rounds, like, mowing down these targets and the mannequins. And we had two guys, Marcus McFalling, who's here, he and this other guy hid in a doghouse. Like, I mean, it was loud. And everybody else is all dazed. There were, I don't know, 26 or 27 of us. They do this. They pull the volunteer out, you know, shooting people. There's also innocent, you know, civilian mannequins and stuff like that. And so they do this whole thing. And we're just like, it happened in under a minute. And then we get done. They have us stand in a horseshoe. And he asks, what happened? And everybody's like, I don't know. It's stinking loud. I have no idea what happened. Hey, how many terrorists were there? You know, one of our guys was like, well, there were two. And then somebody else was like, I don't know, 4. There was a lot of gunshots and stuff like that. How many gunshots do you think there were? Was there 20? Was there 100? And, you know, he made the point that, like, in that space, those sort of things happen. They get one cell phone video from this angle, and then the reporter finds the guy that says there were 4 terrorists when there were actually only 2. This guy saw 2. And as soldiers, we can't talk to them. And so they're going to run with whatever narrative they want. You know, meanwhile, we saved this guy, and we disposed of the terrorists, and we took care of them, but they're going to run with the most outlandish story. And in that space, even people that are well trained to be in that space with the loud and the shooting and everything, you get different narratives and different stories. And so, you know, you start grabbing all these civilians and asking them, you're going to get some outlandish stuff. Well, he's in the middle of telling us this, and we're standing there in this horseshoe, and the one soldier standing there, and two guys to my right, this guy dressed as a terrorist tries to stab the soldier from behind, and they whipped him down on the ground and everything. I grabbed another pastor and threw him in front of me. I'd like to say that I, you know, tried to wrestle him to the ground and help. I was like, I'm going home to my wife and kids. I threw this dude in front of me. And, you know, and you had this, you know, split second moment where you had, you know, have to make a decision, and he stops everybody again. He says, you know, if I'm on this side of the horseshoe, you know, and I take a picture, it looks like this Israeli soldier is, you know, harming this Palestinian kid who's innocent. But if I take it from the other side of the horseshoe, you see the knife laying on the ground next to him. So which one is the news going to post? And you know, they were building that narrative. And then the coolest part of the whole demonstration, as awesome as it was for the fully automatic weapons and the demonstration and all that, they brought out what they call protective dogs. So they're not attack dogs. They're not bomb sniffing dogs or drug sniffing dogs. They're designed as protective animals. So they don't necessarily attack on command. They're trained to recognize and neutralize threats all on their own. So they set us up in a row of cones, and they're like, don't put your hands in your pockets and don't make any sudden moves. So we're all like, you know, frozen, like, and they bring out this easily 120-pound German Shepherd, like a big dog, and the dog's happy as could be, you know, licking the person in the face, like, you know, a normal dog deal. Then they bring the guy out in the suit that can get chewed to pieces, you know, kind of deal. And he comes out, and the dog comes over to him and is all sniffing him, licking him, all that sort of stuff. And there were some commands where they could get him to heal and they could get him to stay. But they said, you know, the dogs are trained to recognize threats, to recognize weapons, to recognize certain things. We can release them into a crowded market and they will only attack people that are threats. And I'm like, that seems so wild. So the dude was there like in his vest or whatever and in the gear. And he goes, you know, we're going to change one thing about the scenario. And so the dog is happy as can be, going around, sniffing, all that sort of stuff. The guy went behind the shed, came back around. The dog's whole demeanor changed. Ears went up, like within three steps of him coming around the side. And he was like, you know, who knew that he had a weapon first? He's like, we don't, we can't see it, but the dog knows he has a weapon. Now the dog won't attack until he brandishes it and makes it, you know, known. But all he did was slide a knife up his sleeve and came back out in the same outfit he was in or whatever. And that dog was fixed on him. I mean, ears up. I'm like, the dog's going to take him out. And as soon as he went to raise his arm, dog pummeled him. Took him out, didn't touch, you know, anything else. And he said, you know, you'll see these white vans set up in these areas. And he's like, we have four or five of them. And if there's ever a threat or something like that we're aware of, we'll just turn the dogs loose and they won't attack kids. They won't attack. They only attack threats. And they were explaining how they're trained. And I was like, that is cool. I mean, it was really cool. So then, of course, the next time we're in a crowded place, we're all looking for the white van. We're like, oh, there it is. <You know? laughs> And that was a really neat experience I'd never had before. And it was fun to kind of see, you know, the training and what they go through to live where they live.
Yeah.
And
so now when you in your mind, you think what I would do in a situation like that. And then when it goes down, even if it's that demonstration,
yeah,
two separate things.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, we're in Ohio. A lot of our buddies conceal carry and, you know, have a small arsenal in their basement or whatever. And as much as I'd like to think. So you got to understand the context. Everyone in Israel serves in the military, like it's conscription. So I think girls have to serve 2 years and guys have to serve 3. Everyone knows their way around a weapon. Everyone has been in some form of altercation, to say the least, whether or not they've taken a life or not, that may be a different story, but they have served in some sort of capacity where their life was on the line or somebody else's life. And they were, so there's a different mentality. I heard, on a previous trip, and I believe our instructor said it that day. He said, Israel's the only country in the world that when we hear gunshots, people run to them rather than from them. And it's just the training that the whole country's been under. And you serve in the military up till you're 50, I think. Wow. You're always in the reserves. I think at 35, you go into the reserves. And so it's just a different mentality where, you know, you had all these pastors, and some of us are gun enthusiasts. We had a couple of good old boys from Texas and concealed carry. One of the guys was impressive. You could tell he knew his way around weapons, and he picked up on how many terrorists there were. He picked up on a number of those things and seemed a little more engaged in that. And he said, statistically, that's usually what it is. About 1 in 25 will fight, and everybody else is dazed and confused, even if they have weapons on them. Mm. It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, you go and you take your concealed carry class, and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. But, like, I don't know if that ever happened. Like, my heart was shaking in my heart, and like I knew I was safe and I'm in a controlled space, and as long as I stay between the cones, I'm okay. But man, when that boom goes off, it's a total different, you know, you're not shooting at a piece of paper, like you're downrange, like that's right. Different. And they say that that's the case. They tell you that in the concealed carry class, that that's the case when you take the concealed carry class. But it was a very live demonstration for sure. So it was fascinating. It was really neat to connect with them. I'll show you some pictures when we're done. So that was cool. I got to see a couple sites that I'd never seen before. But honestly, my favorite part was just connecting with the guys. You know, you had all these guys from all different walks of life, you know, all across the country, different ages, different racial backgrounds, different church backgrounds. And it was just neat to have us all on one bus. We laughed a lot. And Marcus was notorious for taking pictures of anybody that fell asleep on the bus. And he would post it in our group chat and stuff. And I think he got just about everybody at one point or another.
Blackmail, yeah.
Yeah. Fell asleep. And that was it. I had guys the first couple of days that were like, "Hey, I'll give you some money, 'cause Marcus was my roommate, to take pictures of Marcus while he's sleeping." And, so, I mean, we had just had a lot of fun. It was a real good group of guys, you know, and there were some hiccups along the way. Like anytime you travel, our original flight was delayed. So, we sat on the tarmac for 5 hours. Mm. For them to tell us that, "Oh, the flight crew just timed out, and sorry, there's nothing we can do. You got to get off the plane and come back tomorrow at 1:30. So we had to find hotels nearby the airport. And thank God, you know, the Eagles Wings team and stuff were just phenomenal with setting all that up. And we had hotels before we even got, you know, off the plane. They had them all booked. And so we were able to do that and came back with the guys. Could have complained about that. Everybody was super low maintenance. It was an easy group of guys to go with. Even if they had complaints, they didn't voice them, and they just, "Hey, what can we do to help and make this as easy as possible?" Which is so much more fun. You know, I'm sure you've been around, you get one or two divas and it's like, that's just
miserable
the worst.
For the rest of the time.
And, guys were great. It was really, really good. And the weather was perfect. I mean, it was a high of 72 to 78, I think, when we were in Jerusalem. Perfect sun. It was wonderful.
Very cool.
So you ever going to go with me?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about doing Europe one of these times, too. And then, you know, that thing happened and they shut down. I can't move anywhere. I'm afraid to go to Canada. I don't know how you were able to get out of the country and get into.
So I had to take a PCR. It was my first one. I had to take it 72 hours beforehand, and then they gave us a rapid antigen when we landed. So, you know, we had both of those, and that was Israel's requirements. They actually lifted those 3 days after we were 4 days after we were in the country, so they're no longer requiring any of those things. And the U.S. required one for us to come back in.
Any anxiety that any of the 30 guys were going to pick something
no,
up?
No, everybody was good, you know, for the most part. We had one or two hiccups in there, but we navigated.
Okay.
When we needed
to my fear is I go to Canada and then somehow trip the test and get stuck there for 14 days. That would suck.
I kept joking with the guys. I'm like, you know, if I had to quarantine, I'd stay an extra week. My wife would kill me. But I was like, there's worse places to quarantine. Right, I mean, we were right on the beach in Tel Aviv. It was nice. So, but it's just one of those trips that really marks guys deeply. I got to meet Rabbi Pesach, who's been on our show, who I do the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast with. He came and met me at the hotel the one night, and a couple of guys, we walked up to the Western Wall, prayed together, ate some shawarma on our way, and then we recorded a podcast at midnight in the middle of a park in the middle of Jerusalem. It was awesome. Yeah. Just the old city walls in the background and just talking to these two pastors who it was their first time there and asking them a whole bunch of questions. And it's one of our most listened to episodes, and it's only been out 4 or 5 days.
Very cool.
So yeah, it was very, very cool. So what's going on in Joe's world? Obviously I was gone for 10 days, you know, what businesses have been launched? You know,
I would say three a week are been coming through these doors to figure out how to make it right, fix it, grow it, whatever.
Wow.
And what's cool about that is that if we didn't have this as a Hail Mary outlet at the last minute, think of those people that just folded and walked away from it, because there would be no hope. So it's like a little rehab center here for, you know, for business. That's kind of an exciting thing.
So what have you had come through that you're excited about?
You know what? It's all the same to me. I mean, whether it's a product or a service, I look at find like the ailment. Like I want to figure out what about it is causing someone to feel like they can't do it or won't do it and whatever. And you think going into this, it's always going to be money. And it is never. Like in the last 2 months, not a single person, the reason that they were struggling had anything to do with financial, had nothing to do with time, had nothing to do with the normal things you would go to say that you were struggling.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it, basically what happens, this is the overall theme, is that when you are in the muck, all you see is muck. And it takes somebody who's not in the muck to tell you obvious things, because in the muck, you see things that aren't pure, like you aren't real, aren't
clouds truthful. Your vision.
Absolutely. And so sometimes just pull somebody up and say, nope, this is what I see over here. This is all you got to do. It's so small. And then they get hope back in their eyes because they didn't see that the whole time.
That's really cool. How about some of your newer ventures? You know, are they starting to make some money and turn corners, do some cool things?
Well, Deb's is the most fun.
Okay.
Yesterday we went out to a big flea market, and she spent the entire day sourcing, you know, antiques and whatever to come back home and flip. And it's cool because, like, you go to like this area and you hit garage sales, and it's kind of like the same stuff, but you go to a different area and it's a whole different crop of different crap. You know what I mean? So I'm wondering like how things maybe start off as like 10 cents and they just keep like selling it to each other until it gets into the tens and $50. Like how many times has that thing been sold?
You know, it's funny. I was listening to, there are a couple comedians that I really, enjoy, some of their, social media particularly. And, this one guy, Aaron Weber, is a young comedian. I saw him open for somebody else, and some of his stuff's relatively clean and he's pretty funny. He did a podcast recently, and he was talking about how another comedian friend of his was in Indiana somewhere and went into like a thrift store to look for something and found a baseball glove with Aaron's name on it, sent him a picture of it. And he looked at it and he goes, man, that kind of looks like my glove. And he sent it to his mom, and mom's like, well, that's your dad's handwriting. And he's like, I don't know how my glove got, you know, I grew up here, how it got to some thrift store in Indiana. But that goes to, you know, your point that, you know, some of that stuff turns hands how many times.
Yeah. And even there's some even local references that I found in other areas. I think we went down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and we went to a thrift shop and we found something from Youngstown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So crazy.
Yeah. So what's on the horizon then? You know, obviously I just got back from Israel, so I'm sinking in. Kids are finishing up school, going swimming here today because it's 90 some degrees. Is your pool open? Are you?
It is. Yeah.
Have you been in?
Up to 87 degrees already.
So there's no point in even going in. But that's the way the missus likes it. So that's it. Where you keep it. That's awesome. Are you doing some movie nights this summer?
Yeah, and this what do you Friday, got? We got a movie night. We're doing Ghostbusters. We got a couple musical acts lined up. So yeah, a lot of entertainment this summer.
So movie night, Ghostbusters, and where is that?
It's in Struthers, Mothy Park.
Okay, yeah. Very cool. And so that's Youngstown Studio putting that on in conjunction with Struthers.
Series, I think we got 6 events already scheduled for this summer.
Which series? Ghostbusters, the good one?
The Afterlife, the newest ones. Yeah.
Nice. So you're doing some, you know, promotional events and stuff like that. What's on the horizon for the studio this summer?
It's going to be mostly entertainment. Like the studio dips in the summer as far as because people aren't in their house. They want to get out. Yeah. So we're joining them and we're going to give people things to do outside.
Beautiful. Yep. And then Bahamas? No Bahamas?
No Bahamas. No. Still
sticking with Gus the Bus.
Gus the Bus. Yeah, we got a California trip in July. So we're going to be hitting the road and spending $9 billion in fuel. Cannot wait.
One of the pastors is from Sacramento, and he sent us all a picture today filling up his tank with gas, and it was like $6.09 a gallon out there or something like that.
It's going to cost me 1,000 gallons of gas for this trip.
Just take the Tesla. You guys can sleep in the Tesla, right?
Totally.
So where exactly are you going on the California trip? Are you shooting straight across and then down?
Yeah, we're doing the northern trek first, and then we're going to end up, we're going to spend a lot of days over in Grand Canyon and that way, and then we'll spend a week out to California and back, and then come back through the southern trek. So we'll be in the desert in July. That is the best place to be, in a tin
Lots
can.
Lots of water. And that's a two-week trip?
Three week.
Wow. Nice. You're going to be all tan and it's going to be good.
And I have not, I mean, I've flown out west, but I've never driven beyond, I want to say Tennessee is the most westernly. Texas would be the most western point now, but before that it was Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been past the Mississippi River other than in a plane. Yeah. That's wild. So is Deb looking forward to her summer? Is she done school? Is that
she got this week? Just like a couple days left. Yeah.
Yeah, our kids, I think, are done the 7th, whatever that is next.
School schedules are weird anymore, aren't they?
We always went to like the middle of June. We went to like June 23rd or something like that. I think my high school graduation was the 23rd. And it's like, yeah, they're like, oh, we're going to be done by, you know, Memorial Day. I'm like, what? And then they start after Labor Day. I'm like, so.
We get our education on YouTube anyhow. That's true. It's almost not necessary.
And Ryan doing anything exciting this summer? Has he got anything that he's looking forward to? Or
okay, so I taught him video editing, and so he's got a million ideas about making his own stuff. So he's in invention mode right now. I don't know where it's going to end up.
Yeah, but
it's going to be exciting no matter where it is.
And he'll be going into what grade next year?
Seventh.
Wow.
Yep. Little dude's growing up.
Charlotte's going to be in fifth grade, and we're like. She's like, I get to pick, and she's been playing piano. And then I guess Boardman requires them to play a stringed instrument or I don't know. You got to pick an instrument. And so she got fitted for a viola or viola. I don't even know that was an instrument. And
how'd you pick that?
They gave them, here are your options. And she's like, I want to do that. Like Denny's. I want to eat that. You know what I mean? You don't even need to be able to read. Just point at the picture. No, I honestly don't know. She came home saying, I don't know if that's because that's what her friends wanted to do or if she genuinely was like, hey, I'm going to do that. She loves the music teacher and seems to really, like, that's been a strong pull for her. She loved doing the concert choir and chorus and stuff like that. She loved that sort of stuff.
You want to hear Joe's story on that same line?
Yeah.
They did the same thing in elementary school where they had us pick. It wasn't a requirement, but they gave us a thing to pick.
Did you pick, like, the triangle or the kazoo?
I picked the violin. So I went home and I said, hey, I decided I'm going to play the violin. And my parents were like, okay. And they came home with a saxophone. They're like, we found a saxophone at a garage sale. You're playing the saxophone.
You get the discount saxophone. Yes. That's what you're playing.
It didn't even work. It was dented all up and it was terrible. But I had to play this stupid saxophone.
Oh, that's too funny. That's too funny. But yeah, I mean, you know, we're going to go to Ocean City for a week, which we're looking forward to being with family. And, yeah, it's going to be some good stuff, I think.
I do need some ocean. Like, it's been a while since I've been to the ocean.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, the Mediterranean's not, like, crazy wavy or anything. It's kind of like the Gulf in that regard. So, but, yeah, it was nice to be by the ocean, get some of the guys swam in the Sea of Galilee, which is big, but it's still a lake. It's fresh water.
Yeah.
We didn't do the Dead Sea, so didn't get to do any floating. But
you did that last time, though.
I've been a couple times. Marcus really wanted to go to the Dead Sea because he's like, I don't float in anything, so I'm excited to see if I can float. And
he's gonna push on science a little bit.
I'm telling you, he overcame several fears. We had a couple guys. Marcus is not a fan of heights, and everything's a mountain, like on a cliff face. Like, so we went to Masada, and you had to get in this cable car where they squish about 70 people in this cable car, and you go up 2,000 feet. Now, what's crazy is the Dead Sea is the lowest place on Earth. So when you go to the top of Masada, you're actually just at sea level.
No kidding.
And you went up 2,000 feet because you're at the lowest place on Earth. It's kind of wild. But yeah, that he overcame that, which was huge. And then he actually preached on the boat on the Sea of Galilee. And we're walking over to the boat. And he goes, are they giving us like life vests and life preservers? I'm like, no. And he's like, I've never been on a boat without one. And I'm like, you're going to be all right. This is a big boat. And it's not, you know, you can see the shore pretty much from wherever you're at. And he's like, I don't think you understand. He can't swim. So he's kind of like, but he overcame, he preached on the Sea of Galilee. We had fun.
Cool.
And, yeah. So, I mean, all of that stuff for me, like anytime I go, it's just, you know, bucket loads of fun. I can't wait to take the kids. Charlotte keeps telling me I'll get baptized when you take me to Israel and I can get baptized in the Jordan. I was like, oh, it's good enough for Jesus. We'll make it happen for you. So, yeah, we're pumped for the kids to start school. Graham's talking about flag football and all that. They're like, we're going to do this and this. I think I'm going to do Graham's super into football. I think I'm going to either take the boys or me and Graham go to the Hall of Fame because he went when he was little. And so we were talking about today, and I said to my wife, I said, I think I'm going to surprise him, just pick a day, wake up and be like, son, we're going. Yep. And let him have the full experience. He'll eat that up. Benjamin will come because Graham likes it. And Abraham will want to be included with the boys, but Graham is like fixated. Let me ask you this. This will be fun to talk about. So, we had the parade yesterday, and one of the things that I'm learning is Graham is more concerned with football, his jump shot, talking about sports, etc. Benjamin is fixated on girls. He's six. I'm literally like, or going to be six, or I forget how old my kids are. It's 10, 8. Yeah, he'll be be seven, six. I don't know. He's going to be in first grade, so he's got to be six already. Yeah. Yeah. He'll turn seven in August. And, you know, he came home from the dentist and he picked out this plastic ring and he goes, now that I got this ring, I can get married. And we were like, who are you going to marry? And my wife asked him, anticipating he was going to be like, you, mom, or whatever. Like, you know, cute thing that little boys do. And he was like, he said this girl's name. And we were like, who's that? And he was like, she was on my soccer team. Like, whatever. And I'm like, okay. And this big old grin on his face. So like a couple weeks go by and we're at the parade yesterday. And a girl that's in his kindergarten class was there. And he goes to me, he goes, Dad, can you come over with me to say hi to her? And I was like, why, buddy? You a little nervous? He's getting all red in the face and giggly. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to have to watch this. And so I start walking with him and he wants me to go over. I'm like, listen, let me explain to you how this works. I'm your dad. I'm not your wingman. You see Graham over there? That Graham's your wingman. Come. And I brought Graham over. I'm like, Graham, support your man. He wants to go talk to a girl. You need to go over there with him. That's not my role. Like, I did that for my friends. Like, this is your role. And then eventually the two of them were running around playing tag, you know, like you do it. 5 and 6 years old. But I said to Sam, I was like, we're not gonna have to worry about Graham with girls. It's Ben. I mean, he is like, I'm like, okay, little man. And but have you had to navigate that with Ryan at all? Is he focused on girls at all?
I was like he was. I had kindergarten girlfriend kiss a girl by the time kindergarten was even
over. They had to talk to my parents. I waited by the coat rack and would kiss all the girls good morning. And then, like, the second day of school, they call my parents. And I'm like, please tell Doug that he cannot kiss all the girls on the way in from school. And I remember very much, like, my mom being like, listen, we know you're just doing that because you love everybody, but please stop.
So my son's school, they're very small groups of kids that they've literally grown up, like, from the time they were in preschool together. So they're almost like a brother-sister dynamic.
Sure.
Not new everything. Like, there's still some... You know, some things that happen.
Well, and they're starting to hit that age where body chemicals are changing. Right. And
so you could see some interests are taking shape, but no sooner than I thought.
It's
about right on time.
Yeah. It's just interesting to watch that season start to birth. Cause like we haven't really had to deal with that with Charlotte. And then, you know, for Benjamin, you know, going into first grade and he's like, you know, I'm getting married and I got a ring, and I got a girl. I'm like, hold on. It's like, I haven't had to deal with this with Charlotte or Graham, but you know, here you are at six and you're ready to run down.
Casanova in every group, man.
Well, I guess at some level, I'm guaranteed to get a grandbaby some way. Oh, that's too funny. So what's on your agenda the next couple of weeks? I know, I've been out of the country. What's coming up on the horizon?
Really? I mean, we're probably every weekend going to try to scoot away and hit some kind of.
Yeah. So where were you guys away from Memorial Day?
So we were, it's just over in Akron, about an hour away.
Oh, is that like Jellystone area?
Yeah. Right around that area.
Yeah. And we camped there.
It was very like no frills type of place. So we got to just sit around the campfire and talk. And that's exactly what I mean. Ryan got to cut away from the electronics for a little while. It's so healthy. Like you don't know how bad it is until you go without it for a couple days and get back to normal.
Bro. So the one thing on top of everything, like I miss my family when I'm in Israel. There's certain things that I'm like, oh, okay. I kind of miss that. The two things that are just incredible. One, the quality of food that you eat, because so much is grown in country. There's fresh fruits and vegetables at everything. So you're constantly eating cucumbers and tomato salad and like just and it's delicious. It's not, I don't know. Sometimes you get fruits and vegetables here and you're kind of like, it's bland or whatever. You got to chuck enough salt on it to get it down. And so much, the watermelon was off the charts and they grow so much of it there at the different kibbutz. But so I love that part. But the other thing is how little I'm on my phone. I have a plan that allows me to use it as if I'm in the States. So I can text, I can call, all that sort of stuff. But you're just so busy and there's so much good stuff and you're outside. And then when you're inside, you're tired. And so like there's very little downtime to just be like scrolling through Facebook or TikTok or whatever. Now I posted and I would do that as soon as we got on the bus. I'd post my couple of pictures and use your phone to take pictures. But I didn't play any games. I didn't scroll. I didn't look at TikTok for 10 days. And I was just like thinking about that when I got back, like because you can see your screen time percentage and stuff. And it was like, whoo, they were like, should we send in a rescue mission? Like, are you okay? You know, kind of deal. But it's one of those things that I'm like, man, that's so nice. And then I get back, you know, into the rhythms here and I'm like, why do I keep going for my phone with those sort of things? It's like, you know, you have so much less downtime when you're there, and you're more engaged, and there's more conversation and more. And I'm like, in my head coming back, I'm like, man, I have to be more cognizant, and I have to create an atmosphere where I don't use my phone as much. It's not like I'm trying not to use it. It's just the result of the atmosphere and everything that you're doing and where you're at. And I just always find that super unique. And then coming back, I'm like kicking myself. Like, why did I start doing that again? Start playing that game or whatever.
It's even like we're camping. Like, we have a firing in our backyard, right? We have chairs in our backyard. We could any day go back there, light a fire. But because we're camping, it makes us go do those things. And we're like, you know, a weekend feels so much longer when we're camping because we're taking advantage of it. We're going to do things. You could pick any weekend, any other time, and you waste half of it doing stupid shit. Yeah.
No, that's true. It's very true. Well, I'm looking forward to the summer. Israel was awesome. It was good to catch up, Joe. And we'll be back here on Thursday. And look forward to chatting a little more.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us.